Welcome, everybody, to another great episode of Weekly Wings, a DroneLife.com podcast. We have a very interesting episode today. We'll be diving into some really exciting topics, looking at simulators, a new simulator here, focusing more on the FPV side of things. Samuel's been able to dive into it. We'll get his feedback. We'll look at a couple counter UAS systems. We've touched on those recently in the past couple of weeks. Current testing the Marines are doing, and also some systems out of Israel. In the tech spotlight, we'll be looking at a drone that is installing sensors onto power lines. Also, we'll be looking at the SAIL drone again, which was deployed into Hurricane Milton. We'll be keeping with the drone light show here theme with a Tesla drone show. They had a recent event revolving around robotics, and it looks like there was a drone show there in order to entertain participants. And we have a standing drone show that's going to be taking place in Denver during this holiday season. A couple of the last things we'll touch on throughout this episode is the use of drones again in Western North Carolina for the disaster response. Very interesting application of drones here. We'll see and discuss how a drone was used to discover a new plant. And then lastly, lights out. We're going to end the Weekly Wings podcast here talking about a drone that is inventorying warehouses inside with the lights out. So again, thank you for joining Weekly Wings. Paul Rossi, your host with 910 Drones. Joining me today, as always, Terry Neff and Samuel Stansberry. So the alternator in my truck failed, went out. So that was something I got to navigate at the start of this wonderful day. Right after I shut the truck off, I kind of looked at the two kids as I was dropping them off, and I was like, I should not have done that. I tried to turn the car back over. Dead. Their daycare is right next to a fire department. So immediately I just had this like, you know, oh, everything will be all right. You know, there's a fire department next door. Everyone over there has a truck. I've got jumper cables. And sure enough, dropped the kids off and walked over there. They helped me out, no problem. So question I have, Terry, Samuel, you get to pick who goes first. Car stuff, anything, lock a key in a car, fuel pump fail while you're driving. What's your worst, best car mechanical story?
Well, I'll go first. Just recently, funnily enough, you said that about your alternator. My car's battery died actually a week ago. It's the first thing that's failed on me in this car, but it's to be expected. It was coming up on 4 years old, you know. It was about time for it to puff out. But yeah, I had to replace that. It was not nice. $230 I had to spend on that, but...
And it's that time of year too, because my alternator, and first I was thinking battery light came on, but it is that time of year. It's the temperature's kind of changing, and now it's putting a little bit more the cold cranking amp. So in the summer months, you know, that battery was just fine to get things going, but now the draw on the power. This sounds like maybe that's what happened with you, Terry.
It was pretty cold that night. It's the first cold night.
Samuel, any?
I'm going to steal Terry's. And essentially, yeah, the battery gave out earlier this year on my car, which was I get in the car, I crank it up, and it doesn't go. And I look over with my passenger, and I'm like, well, we're going to be here a second. So let's, and of course, this was in the summer, North Carolina. So it was 90 plus degrees out, and we're just, couple minutes out there already sweating, but eventually got it figured out, was able to get a jump and went to the local car parts store and we got that switched out. But I think that's the most recent thing that comes to mind, especially with Terry mentioning his story. So something very similar.
It's so not terrible timing.
Maybe you said you had a wonderful start to the day. That doesn't sound very wonderful, Paul. That sounds pretty bad.
Oh, it is what it is. Yeah. I kind of, like I said, I knew going in that the temperatures have changed here, and I don't know if it put more draw on just the, but again, it's not the battery, it was the alternator. And I knew this because once I got the jump, I'm driving back home, all the gauges, so if you didn't know this, right, how to tell if your battery's bad or your alternator, driving down the road, all the gauges just dropped, right? Battery gauge, speedometer, oil, all the lights go out. Because the gas engine will run forever, but without the alternator, no electrical power. I also had a fuel pump fail one time. So I was in Daytona Beach, super hot, summer months. The fuel pump in the truck stopped. So like all the lights were working because the battery was good, but there was no gas going to the engine. So the truck just shut off. But anyway, let's go ahead and dive into what is our first topic here. A simulator. We talked about Zephyr in the past, Zephyr being a more commercial focused drone simulator. What we have to talk about this in this episode is FPV Logic, which is a essentially a FPV simulator that you can play, or you know, I say play or whatever the term would be, through Steam.
I was gonna say Steam so is known for
Samuel
games, so
has
I would say play, yeah. Train, play, something yes. Very similar.
Practice, right? Yeah, like practice. And so FPV Logic is accessible through the Steam platform, and Samuel has been diving into it. So you know, what do you think about it, Samuel? Thoughts initially here?
Yeah, so I think I'm about 2 hours in now, about. So got it recently, been playing through it, practicing with it. But essentially, it feels very fluid, and I can imagine this is how actual FPV pilots fly. I've been talking with some local FPV pilots that I know. It's kind of funny. You can use basically any console controller you own. So using a DualSense PS5 controller here, I eventually do want to kind of upgrade to an actual FPV controller. Currently using the Technique index and thumb for the sticks on both sides. And yeah, just jumping straight into it. Of course, we have a video playing now where these pros are playing, and being starting off with a DJI controller or DJI drone in the past, it was super easy. Doing something like this is like a way different beast in and of itself. But honestly, it's been really fun to learn. So I've been having fun with that. I'm in the freestyle mode. So they have two different modes, freestyle and racing mode. I can't do any of the races yet. I'm still trying to learn the basics of moving around and getting good with just kind of taking turns, giving it throttle, accelerating, things like that. But that pitch and yaw, but once you get a few hours into the freestyle, I think you can actually do a race or two. So that's what I'm working my way up towards now, and I would recommend it. It's been very insightful, and I can definitely see the growth I've had within just the last 2 hours of the simulator I put into it. So do chunks at a time, come back, take breaks, and then you will see that growth. I have a long ways to go, but I'm not immediately crashing within the first 10 seconds now. So happy about that. I got to get you and Terry into it.
And the benefit too with the remote is you can use a PlayStation or Xbox or like that standard game controller, but they're also a lot of the FPV remote controllers that are used to fly aircraft in real space are, you could connect them to a computer and then pilot in this simulator. So it's not like just purchasing only for
I think that's a really cool thing.
Only
too,
for the computer use only.
I'm using this as like, I want to get a minimum of 20 hours before I actually touch anything FPV related, but this has definitely made me want to try like in real life drone FPV. Because, you know, I had that in the back of my head for a while. You sent this over to us at a couple days ago or whenever, and prior to that, I was thinking, man, you know, I saw an FPV video on Instagram. I'm like, that kind of looks cool. I kind of want to try that. And you sent that over, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to try it. So now working my way up there. We'll see if I actually commit those hours and then move on to the real thing. But this has been a great start so far and would recommend.
In $20, so... right, is that what you said?
Yeah, $20 for your
the cost
to run the software. I don't think it's too spec heavy either.
And I would say,
go ahead.
There, it runs on Mac, so it does run on Windows and Mac. And before we look at the specs, real quick, I just wanted to point out, like, the image that's up here. This is much like skiing or race car driving. When you're just looking at the freestyle, it's just do what you want, right? But when it comes to racing, there are courses. And so as a competitor, you're going in and you know what track you're going to be competing on. So you could have been practicing that exact setup, just like skiers, car drivers, other like slalom, I think of like Olympic sports, right, where you have like competitive runs and it's like time trials.
I think that's one of the really cool things is there's multiple maps that you can practice on, either freestyle or racing, as well as multiple drones to choose from that have different statistics. So like they have propellers, wheelbases, battery, weight, top speed. All of those are different things that can change with each drone. And I think that's such a cool and unique feature because I can kind of cycle through these different drones and be like, oh, I want to use the Flyfish RC drone or the FPV Logic drone. They have different brands within the the simulator itself, which is kind of cool. But different stats give it different flight characteristics. Different cameras on the drone. So some of them have these GoPro cameras that have very crisp imagery. And then some of them have these analog type cameras on them. So it's kind of grainy footage, but just a bunch of different things you can change on it, which I think is cool. That's insane how fast.
Like this one right here, I just paused.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just paused it here. It looks like flying in a house. The imagery is so realistic. It's and so there's some grainy, and you got the little tiny whoop. So even from learning the platforms, the sizes, what they're called, the lingo, the language, this is like, gosh, that weaving that happens right there at the end. It's really, really cool. Let's see.
This is I will like to point out, I'm pretty sure this is a single developer game. So one person made this. And for the quality that is put into it, it is very, very well made for video in terms of video games.
Yeah, absolutely. Like from what I'm seeing, like for you, I'm like, wow, that's incredible. But the, yeah, from a processing standpoint, the Mac, 8 gigabytes of RAM, 10 gigabytes of storage, you know, they suggest 16 gigabytes of RAM just because it's, you know, the imagery and the movement of the game itself. I can imagine you have a minimum, but there's always, you know, for the optimal gameplay. And then from a Windows standpoint... you know, looking at the graphics cards here and storage space, again, you got a minimum, which isn't the most highest, but when you look at what they're recommending, certainly the types of computer devices that most people are going to have, right? Like if you're already, you know, using Steam and what you're seeing, similar requirements. So Terry, are you going to get into that one? I know you've kind of been like sluggish on the.
I'm sluggish on it. If I do one, I'm going to go for the most realistic one. So I'll do my own research on it, and we'll. I'm a little weird when it comes to buying stuff, so I got to actually research it. Velocidrone is what I'm seeing right now. That is the most accurate to real life physics.
I think if I put my 20 hours in, is that on Steam?
What's that on?
I think you can just look them up. I don't think they're on Steam. That one's very easily accessible. This Velocidrone one, I'm looking at their website. There's like 15 different versions of it. I don't know what they're doing with that. I need to chill out.
All right. And so moving on, looking at some counter UAS stuff, Terry's going to go and do some deep diving and come back and let us know which is the most realistic of the FPV softwares. But just kind of transitioning into that counter UAS space, we've talked about the Marines and you know, some recent contracts and developments. So just bringing to folks' attention, the Marines are putting the LMADIS counter drone system through a tactics course for the first time, which you can see pictured here. I think the biggest and most exciting thing is the fact that we're actually seeing a lot of testing. So in the coming, you know, days, months, years, it seems like there should be some effective systems in place. Do you guys think so?
Can you say that again? Sorry.
Like from a defense standpoint, like we're seeing all these companies coming out with counter UAS systems, and it seems like everyone's doing a demo or testing stuff. So what do you guys feel like in the years to come, we're on the right trajectory to be able to counter drone swarms?
Yeah, I mean, there you have to make these products, and then you have to test them, and then if the U.S. military is requesting you to do a demo with your product, it's probably up there with the top dogs. You know, they're not just going to waste their time. But I think we're in a position now possibly to even like, maybe not like a massive drone swarm, but like a 5 to 10 drones, I think we could probably handle with our current capabilities. Samuel?
I think we could probably do. So when you're saying 10 to 5 drone swarms, are you, how many are in the swarm specifically? Because I mean, you've showcased so much different,
like 5 to 10 drones in the swarms.
Honestly, I think you, I don't know, with the technologies that we've seen so far, I think you could probably do a lot more taking out, like if it was maybe even like 8, not even 8, but like 40-ish drones in a swarm. Just like I'm thinking of the microwave technology that we saw. I could see them just zapping them and then go boom, unless I'm not following specifically. But
well, I guess what I'm trying to say, maybe not, we probably can't even do it right now. Now that I think about it, we probably don't have this technology put in place just yet. Like we have the detection, but we don't have the, I don't know. I'm not in the military. I don't work for the government, so I can't really be sure of anything I say, so I'm kind of looking like a half-wit right now, but you know,
I wouldn't even say that necessarily, Derry, but I mean, it is kind of crazy just seeing and stuff just, like adding a laser beam to take out drones. It's like that's surreal to me, because I mean, that's kind of where it's at now. Yeah, that's what it's coming to.
It's so hard to even tell just looking at this whether or not this is actually
that's AI.
That's what I was gonna say. Like that's rendering. That's a complete rendering, and like this is what's going out. But lasers, microwave melting technology, you know, basically like these walls and it's invisible, and now you fly through it and you're getting laser zapped, microwave melted. And between all the demonstrations and again the company announcements, it just seems like 10 months ago, not even, right? with everything happening in the Ukraine in Israel, people were like, oh, this technology, they're so ahead, they have these swarms, they're going to come to the United States. It's like this huge threat. And but if you actually go back, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, it seems like a lot of development and research had already begun. Like once the commercialization of this started and folks saw it, how easily it was being integrated into everyday life, I feel like that's when you could actually go back and see the technology for the counter UAS really running in parallel with the military doing a lot more of its testing, you know, and not publicizing it, or people weren't looking for it.
Right.
Now it's like, hey, it's mature, it's proven, and we want everyone to know that it's out there. And so that's pretty neat. I don't know, just things, it seems like things have shifted from what the mindset was 6 months ago of a fear of how are we going to do this to like, oh wow, we're doing it.
Question, do people really think that another country is going to get a drone swarm into the US? Is that really, do people actually think that's possible?
Well, I think that is a valid question of like, how do you counteract this new technology? Is like, once someone builds it, it's like, okay, you built this, how do we counteract it, you know? And then how do you counteract what they're counteracting? And it's like a back and forth almost. But to your point, yeah, it's kind of crazy to think, how do you get a a drone swarm over?
The U.S. So, knows before a country's going to get attacked 48 hours before, and they let them know they're getting attacked. I think they would know, you know? you get what I'm saying?
See what it's you're like,
I got to go back and look because my life has been a... my life has been like a whirlwind for almost 2 years of just like constant. I think one of the classes that I did, I think one of the ideas or products that I had overall pitched was this idea of a remotely deployable drone swarm. So think of it like a cube, and it's just this like, you could camouflage this box cube device to look like anything and just drop it in a desert, in a remote area. If you camouflage it well enough, you could put it in a, you know, populated area, and it would have enough power that it would just sit there. And whenever you wanted to like activate the swarm, you could use satellite communication. So you wouldn't need like to plug into it. And through satellite communication, you could deploy a swarm of like 20, 30, 40, 50 drones. You know, the more drones it would deploy, the bigger it would have to be. But could you imagine just dropping something like parachuting it in, or just like, you know, so that's what I think of, Terry. When I think of like this thing happening on the city, it's not like it's going to fly from, you know, but it is. That is exactly what's happening, right? In the Ukraine, they're Iran, they're literally flying swarms from their country into the other country. So you kind of, versus, hey, I'm going to plant this, and a year later, this swarm is just going to wreak havoc.
But to get, I don't know. I mean,
how the hell do you counter that?
Yeah, well, if it's a singular person, you better hope you're not on a watch list where they know what you're doing, because they know. You know, I'm on a watch list. I'm probably on a I mean, like, they know what I do in my free time. You know, like, I was talking on my
we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know, Terry. I have no idea what you're talking about.
And I was talking about a scope in the game, and I haven't looked up a single rifle scope in my life, and I got an Instagram ad for the exact scope I was talking about less than 10 hours before.
Oh, so they're listening. Yeah, they're listening.
They know what's happening.
And you gotta, they're give listening, then next time
anyone's,
you better
listening,
not, you better pay in cash, you better not do the paper trail. No phones, you know, it'd be hard.
Paying cash, that's funny. Do you guys happen to watch an HBO documentary came out. It was supposedly this guy was going to unveil the founder of Bitcoin, Satoshi Nakamoto.
The documentary called?
It's on Max. It's on HBO Max. It's Money Electrified.
Something money put on the queue.
Electrified, and it's like
Money Electric.
Yeah, and so it's pretty interesting, but I can't remember.
Even Bitcoin's traceable. You can trace Bitcoin.
And that's what they ended up getting into is how you can trace Bitcoin and all the Silk Road. Like they ended up doing that huge Silk Road bust because they could go back. But there was one person on there who was like during his presentation, he was like a big Bitcoin fan. But he was also telling everyone, like, if you don't spend cash, like, you know, basically screw you. Like, hey, if you're out there and you're listening and in this live audience, if you don't spend cash ever, he's like, I hate you. Because even though he's this huge crypto, he's this huge fan of crypto, he is also, for some reason, it's almost like these two things go hand in hand, right? Like, if you really think about it, if the dollar, right, was to completely have no value, where the hell would we be? Maybe as a, not only as a country, but as a world. Anyway, on a huge tangent. Money Electrified, check it out. Jumping into more of our tech side here, DroneLife.com article came out just recently this week, looking at drones installing powerline sensors in seconds as Hindle Power aims to meet U.S. grid compliance. They are using a drone here, and this is certainly not a drone that you're just going to, you know, purchase at Best Buy or even off the internet, right? Very specialized, custom vehicle made to operate within close proximity to high energy lines, as well as carry a very specific payload. It looks like it has dual RTK, right? If you're going to be hitting these lines with sensors, positioning is probably pretty important. And I mean, this is really neat, right? Being able to use a UAS to, you know, put a sensor onto a power line in order to then get some readings that, you know, normally it might have taken a helicopter or a human being.
It was not on my 2024 bingo.
Get a helicopter to do that. These sensors they're using are pretty interesting too. I think they literally just clip on there because they wouldn't be able to do it in seconds if that was not the case.
Yeah, the magic balls, they're neuron sensors.
I think they communicate with each other so they can like tell exact. So like if you have one 100 feet away from the other, you would know exactly where the break is. It's between these two if something was to go wrong. I think that's kind of what they're getting at.
Yeah, because when you have a line that's going from A to B and you have equipment on either side, you know if something's failed, but being able to determine where the exact failure is. I know they've had ways to in the past kind of determine where faults are and isolate them. Traditionally, installing these sensors would require a team of six linemen working manually on power lines. Hindle Power's drone-based system allows a two-person crew to install each neuron sensor in under 15 seconds. Their 20 drone crews can... Wild.
I was going to say pretty impressive, but wild works too. I like that. Yeah.
800 sensors per week. This is, they're saying that for utilities that require, they're just doing like some pretty basic math here. Well, if you have 1,600 or less, that would be within 2 weeks. Yeah, that's pretty neat. But once they're installed, then what, right? Because there seems to be this regulatory compliance behind it. Right. So once they're all installed, now what? You know, is there a requirement to change them regularly? Do you adapt this drone to do something different? You know, what would be the future once all the neurons are in place? Answers. We need answers. We need to make sure that we're kicking out some good business recommendations.
Well, with any technology-based product, that technology will eventually fail. I don't care how reliable it is. Something in it will break eventually, especially if you're in like a cold climate. It's going to be more susceptible to breakage. So I'm sure they have. And if they haven't thought of this, you know, maybe pack it up. But you're going to have to replace them eventually. So I'm sure they have a plan for that. Something I would like to note, it does look like Hemdale is based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. So Team NC in the building.
Team NC, let's go. That's pretty awesome. Looks like they're doing this stuff across the like the Midwest region.
I think they said, let's see. I'll get you some more information on that.
I think I saw Minnesota, something else.
17 countries. So I don't know exactly where. They don't really elaborate on that, but they're in 17 countries testing.
Testing in 17 countries. And so Hurricane Milton, swept through Florida just this past week. And we highlighted the SAIL drone, which is a remotely piloted water vehicle. And we had shown how it had captured some imagery inside Hurricane Helene. And so some more footage coming in, and I'm not sure. I think based on what I saw in the news that it seemed like this hurricane may have been more intense when it was out over the Gulf. I know we had brought up very similar video, so I'll play this. And Terry, you mentioned some wave heights, but I want to say that the videos we're seeing here seem a little bit more intense than what we saw with the previous hurricane.
Yeah, so it was like a Cat 5 at first, then it moved down to, I think it dropped to a Cat 4, Cat 3, right as
I mean, it sustained a category. The
storm kind of like collapsed.
I was going to say it sustained that until it made landfall in Florida, I believe, Tampa. I think Tampa was one of the worst hit places.
I think it collapsed right before it. And Tampa, what you have to understand about Tampa is they're not set up to take a hurricane. They haven't been hit in over 100 years by anything. I know they're in Florida. You expect them to get hit, but they haven't been hit. And the way their shelf, like their coastal shelf line is kind of set up, it's just they were guaranteed for a flood, and that's why they evacuated everybody.
But that footage of that SAIL drone, that's just incredible. Like, I don't know.
Capturing that data. I mean, the Weather Channel is still not going to be accurate whatsoever, but at least we're getting more data for it.
I saw the helicopter, or not the helicopter, I saw the airplane pilots that flew in there, and they're like, all the stuff was bouncing around. I'm like, did they? And then they showed the video of all, I was like, they don't really seem to have things set up that well if it's bouncing everywhere. They knew they were flying into turbulence. Like, the whole goal was to...
What are you talking about?
There were these two pilots. It was like the, I think the Air Force or whatever the... I think it was the Air Force plane that flew into the... Let's see.
I think I've seen something. I didn't know they had a video of the cockpit. Yeah, just everything's
not breaking. Not the cockpit. It was it's right here. Let's get this ad skipped. It was in the back, so we'll share this here. So, right, they're showing out the window, but like here, you've got like all their setup and
see the camera shaking.
Massive technology in here.
You know what's crazy? I don't even think that like.
Ready?
They got that close to it.
Ready?
Boom!
Oh my. See that? And then
they're so chill about it.
Ooh, all the stuff. Tic Tac bottles.
Like in the box. The box just is sitting back there. It's like a coffee cup. They're like, whoa, all their stuff. He's like his lunch cooler.
Yeah.
I'm like, dang, you just would have thought they might have had like this stuff, all these racks, dude.
Yeah, these server racks are disgusting, by the way. They need to fire whoever's doing those.
I was like, man, maybe they shouldn't have like shared this video because it just seems like, you know, like that's cool and everything.
Some college kids did it. Just
yeah. It's not like they were on a flight that they paid for. It's like,
video jackass.
But again, I don't fly this all the time. So it's like how intense this was. As you can see, it was maybe not what they were expecting. It's just like whoosh, shoof. You can see the bag go sideways. Yeah. So like, see, that camera doesn't have a gimbal. Like he's holding a phone or something. So the video is all unstable. And so when you look at these sailboats, the sail drones, their cameras, it almost look like it's...
they have some sort of stabilization for sure.
So it doesn't make it look as bad as it is, right? Like if you were sitting on a raft in that water and you're just like, yeah.
No, totally. it's stabilized. It's not that bad.
Auroras too. I just saw a ton of Aurora videos starting to play Samuel. So it made me think of that conversation where it's like your eye sees it not well. Your camera sees it very well.
Right.
But light shows. You know what I'm talking about, Terry?
Yeah, well, I told you guys about the Auroras last time it happened. And you guys were like, I can't see anything. And I'm like, I can kind of see it, but you have to take a photo of it to see
it. Oh,
you know?
Yeah. I took some photos last night, and yeah, you're absolutely right. So I'm like doing this in the middle. Lauren's like, can you pick up the kids? Like, my truck doesn't start. So a couple of drone light shows here. First, Tesla held an event called We Robot, where they were, you know, bringing together, talking about robo taxis and all the other cool robot stuff. And it looks like at this event, they actually had a drone light show. So you can see the We Robot logo. And followed by Tesla advertising.
I think one thing that I really like about that, the Optimus, is it's not just one color. They really played around with the colors to give it, to me, aesthetically, it looks really cool for Optimus. That looks sick.
And brightness, it seems like some of them are like crayons. You know, when you, like, I suck at drawing coloring. Right. Well, my wife, Lauren's great at it. So, you know how you do the edge and you make it a little darker? It seems like that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
They have shading.
And
with
this
the
was
colors.
At the, I paid no attention to this, but this was at Elon's most recent
We Robot.
Robot, is that an event?
It's an event, like a conference. I think what it is, it's like invite only. If you referred so many people and they bought cars, like if you were like a big referral person and they're, then you would get an invite or something like that.
If you own more than $50,000 in Tesla stock, you are allowed into the show.
Yeah. And so that's neat. If anywhere was going to have
a great way to like,
go ahead, Samuel.
Yeah. I was going to say that's a great way to brand, to do like commercialization with your brand specifically, is like, that's sick. Emerging technology using other emerging technology. That's very cool. But anyways, yeah.
Now, do we know, was this Tesla doing it themselves or did they hire an outside source? Do we know that?
This was, I don't know. We'd have to look that up. I don't think Tesla did it themselves, because it's not like I don't think that they're going to have purchased. Right.
Well, you can't say that with Elon. I mean, Elon could be doing anything for all we know.
That's true. But I'd imagine this is more just like a marketing thing. Hey, find a company, hire them, you know, get some of this, some of that.
That's probably a drone like that is his own drone probably that he built already, and he's just testing it. Like, this is just one of his tests, you know?
Could be. Could be. There is so many advertisements these days on some of these sites. So Samuel, Adblock, DuckDuckGo, no more Google. Tell us what's going on in Denver.
Denver has something really special going on. It sounds like they, for the holiday season, will be having multiple drone light shows. So not just one drone light show. They're going to be doing a couple throughout the season. The first show starting on November 22nd. And the shows will happen all the way through New Year's Eve. So they have all sorts of festivities going on with the drone light shows. Santa Claus riding, delivering presents with some reindeer. It's funny, we talked about another holiday drone light show that's coming up soon, but Denver is going to go ahead and just continuously have them, I think, throughout the weekends in that area. So Wow, that's crazy. And it's go ahead.
It says every night, 40 nights. So November 22nd is when it will begin, and it will run until New Year's Eve.
Can you imagine the contract that whatever company's doing this got to make
40,
this happen?
It's 40 straight nights, November 22nd through the 31st. And some they're probably going to end magic with a, you know, real banger. And so they had the 4th of July, right? Wasn't it Denver that did a big...
They did do an event for the... We had a couple 4th of July events. I'm trying to think specifically which one it was.
A 15-minute show. If you were outside in Denver at about... You were one of the lucky few to get a first-hand look at Denver's nightly holiday drone show. Bright Flight Drone Shows, a Denver-based company. 400 drones. I mean, it's right in your back, it's right in your front yard, and you're getting a lot of publicity for this. So I'd imagine that it's like, it's a good contract, but it's a lot of work. Right.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, like, how much did the Denver city pay for this is what I'm wondering.
Feels like that adds up.
But it's huge because think about it. You can't get to, we talk about these light shows all the time, right? One in Pinehurst coming up, buy your ticket, go to the drone show in Pinehurst. But these pop up and you're like, oh, it's one night. I can't get to Las Vegas on Thursday night. I can't get to here. So now it becomes like, this is their Rockefeller Center, right? You go to Times Square because you know that when they light the tree on this day, you have 6 weeks or, you know, whatever that time frame is to get to Times Square, Rockefeller Center, see the tree, see the lights. You know, they put the ice rink up. And so instead of it being one day, it really is going to probably drive more tourism. So they're spending a little bit of money, which is being used from a marketing standpoint. Cause now you're going to come to Denver over somewhere else because you're like, damn, we can go see a drone light show each night that we're there.
Hmm.
Or at least one of the nights that were there. And it might not cost you any, it might not cost you anything because they're on a contract and it's being done in a public location. I think it's pretty cool.
No, it's sick. It's just, I'm just wondering the logistics. Like, let's say you have your 400 or 500 drones, you know, you're doing it for 40 days straight. What are the odds like 10 or 15 of those drones just crap out every day?
Oh, you got 500. Oh, you got extras. But do you guys remember when it's called cool, what is the thing, downtown Cool Springs downtown,
yeah, in Fayetteville, yeah,
remember when they had that fake ice rink? They put a fake ice rink on the road right in front of the market house, and the whole thing was like they shut that road down for like a week and people were buying tickets to skate on this fake ice rink. And it was all about the Cool Springs downtown putting on these events in order to bring people downtown. And your downtown businesses are paying to be part of that community because they know that they're going to take all these funds together and they're going to create food truck Fridays. And, you know, it's all about the festival, right? What about, what is it called? The third or fourth Friday?
Fourth Friday. They have that downtown festival going on. It kind of brings a bunch of people out there.
They need to do a drone light show. Hmm. Yeah. Use the Woodpecker Stadium. That's where you set your drones up and you do a 100-200 drone light show. That's where Air Vision and Scott Kieran should be. You know, I saw, you know, he's got the Ferris wheel going and everyone else has a robo something, but anyway, so yeah, drone shows, Denver. Hey, if you needed a reason to get out to Denver, we're trying to give you one.
Those dates again, at November...
the 22nd, which is like, that's either Thanksgiving or like the day before or something like that. So I'd imagine the shows in November are going to be like, you know, turkey themed and autumn. And then as it gets into December, they may even adjust to more of your reindeer and snowman and, you know, Christmas.
Yeah. Notably, I do want to say that Pinehurst one is the 29th, which is Black Friday. Oh,
November 29th.
Throwing that back out there.
And now transitioning to our last few topics here that we're going to cover, drones and disaster response. So last week we did talk about, you know, North Carolina farmers and the ag folks, you know, pulling drones out, using those in order to move small amounts of baby formula, medications, water, you know, communications back and forth to these cutoff locations. Drone Life article recently, we had talked about Skyfire AI previously. And the use of it as a tool to enhance disaster response. So the folks with Skyfire had been involved here in the western portion of North Carolina in order to aid in the response efforts. So, you know, not just being able to fly the drones, but then in real time to be able to have that kind of computer automation searching and scanning the photos and the videos in real time to aid for, you know, finding potential lost people. So,
That's a devastating photo right there. Caution, flammable gas in area. I rode on the semi truck.
Yeah. I mean, that looks like out of a video game or something. The mountains, the perfectly blue sky and the clouds.
Is that in North Carolina? Looks like it.
Maybe. I'm not seeing for sure. And so, yeah, the response here in North Carolina, look at this road, this pipe, right? Just the whole road washed away. The military responding out there. I've had a chance to talk to a few folks who are out there operating drones. We can see the like H-20T here, Matrice 350 or 30, right here. And so DJI. Drones have done a great job to just map and help share what's going on in the wake of everything. So bacon AI and everything, you know, can be done a little bit more advancedly, if that's even a word. Speaking of advancedly, I thought this was really neat. Go ahead and mute this here. So a drone that has been adapted in order to take samplings of plants from the side of a cliff. And I mean, did you guys see the little knife thing go through there?
I did not see that. I seen it clamp. I did not see the knife. I was wondering how it cut it. Thought it just kind of ripped it off, you know?
It seems like such
so
a better...
Back here, so it's going to clamp right here. See it?
Oh, okay. I see it now, yeah.
It's like a bread slicer at the food market.
I was going to say, though, this seems like such a better solution than having someone, I guess, before they would have climbed. Like, that's insane, though, looking at this visual, which is a huge cliff. This is insane.
And I think one important thing to point out is what we're seeing here is notice how you may traditionally think, attach it to the drone and put the drone right up close, but then you're taking the aircraft, and the closer the vehicle gets to object bad. So by suspending a mechanism down from the drone, you're keeping the drone at a safe flying altitude while you can still initiate the collection process. So, okay, so I see. So this drone was videoing, right? You've got a videoing drone right here. It looks like a Phantom Force something. And then this is, again, like a Matrice 300, 350. That is incredible. So real-time view.
And this found a new plant, yeah? Because obviously nobody's on the side of that mountain.
And so uncovering one of Earth's remaining hidden species. For the first time, researchers recently used such a drone to discover and describe a new species of carnation hanging off of towering vertical cliffs in Hawaii. So made possible due to cutting edge developments in sensors and drone technology. So what's interesting is you could see it, right? You could fly the drone, and they've probably been able to actually identify it for quite some time, but how to actually collect it has been...
They're like, I got to get that plant one day, man. We got to figure this out.
They call it Mamba, a custom plant collecting claw. So someone's been just like sitting in their garage, just like, trap this, you know, and this... Dude, that saw, that blade that goes right up against the clothes, like that is really that's really awesome. For extraction, researchers used a consumer grade Phantom 4. Initial photos collected were put into Lightroom. GPS data helped researchers find the spot again. They created this custom built device. Researchers remotely control the claw while it hovers. So they used the Phantom 4 in order to do their recon. Wow. So here's their recon photos. That is so cool.
Good for them. New flower.
Probably just like the start too. I mean, I can imagine they could reuse something like this and continuously use this tool now. This is just the first or one of the first successful cases they're showcasing.
Right. How many people are going to see this and think, wow, I need to go fly over here and what might I find? And once you find it now, again, it's one of those super low. It's like a drone, you know, of putting those neural balls onto the power lines is like a low, market man going out there and collecting new species of plants has got to be an even smaller market. So it's like if someone finds something, they'll be like, hey, can you send us that device or the plans to make one? But yeah, I think people will see this and certainly be inspired to potentially, like you were alluding to, Samuel, go find other things. And in closing, we have a final topic here, which I think is super, I don't know, fascinating, extremely fascinating. If you can't, if I'm not giving off this positive, even though the alternator failed, right? There's still this excitement today, and it's all because of this technology. We've talked about inventory, indoor drones for inventory control on this podcast, correct?
Yes.
I think a couple times now.
It was IKEA, right?
Yeah, IKEA for sure.
I think it was, yeah.
IKEA.
I know Terry was going to have a startup competitor. That's what I remember.
Yes, non-drone startup.
Yeah, you were going to set cameras up. That's right. Yes, yes. Terry was supposed to be setting up all these cameras that needed wires, and he was going to spend a bunch of time. And I remember now. So what's super cool, because I hadn't even thought about this, and this is where Terry should have been like, yeah, but you know, you're wasting money on electricity because the drone has to see at night and you can't turn the lights off. So boom.
Was that one of the arguments I had?
I don't think so. But when I saw this, I was like, that should have been an argument. Like, that's one argument that you really can't, like, if your system relies on, you know, certain visual sensors, it's not going to work at night. Well, Corvus Robotics launches inventory system for lights out warehouses. And when I saw this headline, lights out warehouses, I thought to myself, that is crazy. Because at night, once everything's, you know, people are home, nothing's happening, you want to save money. You want to turn the lights off. But if you want to use a drone to fly around, you know, almost all systems at this point would require lights for visual. And so this company's recognized, right, that not only can a drone help save you cost by doing autonomous inventories and making sure that you have the products you need, but now this drone is going to do it at night with the lights off, further decreasing your cost. I mean, what do you guys, like, isn't this, when does it stop? You know, when does it just get to like, all right, that's it. We're not going to see any new drone stuff.
I don't think it would. I don't know.
Probably never, because the world's ever evolving.
Yeah, I was going to say something similar to that. Essentially, it's just going to innovate itself to till it's not a drone anymore. Till it's not a UAS, I guess. It's crazy, yeah, though. I can definitely see the usefulness of that lights out warehouse technology. In fact, so they're selling that product. That is a service-based thing. They're saying, hey, here's a fleet of drones. They're going to be able to inventory for you. And that's kind of what this company is doing here. Fully automated inventory management.
Yeah, let's see. They got
always
the... It's a great first song.
Boom.
Just bass.
Boom. Where's the lights out?
Yeah, see, well, that's...
I can't film the video of it doing it. With
but I do... What I want to see, though, is like that breakdown of the technology being used. So is it like a kind of, what is that, NFC technology where you have it in your phone, it gets so close to another NFC device, it'll talk to it. I'm assuming it's something similar to that.
Yeah, I wonder what it's...
Whoa. But see, the lights are like motion activated. So isn't it kind of like, did you guys see the lights turning on?
Yeah, they're lying.
Oh, here we go. There's some. Just wait for it.
How does...
Okay. Using red light on the drone to...
I think that's also how it scans, too, because, you know, when you're in the checkout, it has the red...
What's the scan? Yeah, I think that red was the scanning.
Yeah, it was just sped up and it was flashing. I wonder how many...
I don't know. I mean, it's...
How many you get when you purchase it? Like, if it's just one, if you get multiple, does it recharge at the pad? Do you have to take out the battery?
You're going to have to talk to sales.
Yeah, you need to... you need to talk to sales. That's what this button's for.
Yeah.
So, scan and generate reports. So, it will scan and generate the reports for you. You can schedule flights, so... Right. I'd imagine it would all be warehouse size dependent. So one drone is probably going to be sufficient for a single warehouse.
Right.
If it's a bigger warehouse, it might need to land and recharge. It'll do half of it and then land and recharge, and then it will do the other half.
I can imagine something like an Amazon warehouse, it would have multiple. Same with the IKEA stuff. It was using a fleet of drones. But I mean, for a smaller scale, this makes sense.
For Amazon.
Yeah, and then how often are you doing the inventory? If you need everything inventoried every evening and you have a ton of stuff, then you would probably need one drone. But if you have one drone and say on Monday nights, we're going to inventory this section. On Tuesday nights, we're going to inventory this section. So I think it comes down to the demand of, like, you know, how often do we need the inventory done, and how much stuff are we inventorying? There's no like one. You got to talk to sales. You know, I mean, if you
create a fake warehouse business and talk to sales and see what they think.
talk to sales. Well, what about 10,000 square feet? Well, that's not that big. Oh, to 100,000 square feet. Double decker.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing too, right? How high is it? We can't do square footage. You need to know how high are your shelves. I don't know.
Samuel's just like, God, why did I call?
And then, that is really neat technology. At the end of the day, just being able to operate, you know, in low light conditions, limited, no light. It's, I don't know why that got me so excited or energized when I saw that. And it goes back to like thermal too. Like when you think of public safety, you know, daytime, that's great. But when the lights go down and it's dark out, are you still able to, get the job done? So what they're doing might open up applications for, you know, a lot of other things. You guys, any thoughts, closing thoughts there on inventory management?
Topic. I can't say I do.
I think it's
logistics and inventory management.
I like the technology and I'm excited to see where it goes. I think it has a lot of potential. This is it starting out, you know? I mean, we saw what they were doing with IKEA. Now, something more scalable, I guess, is coming to people who don't have access to the things IKEA has access to. So that's a big win, I would say.
I do have one thing I would like to, maybe you know, Paul. So how are they moving in the dark? Are they using RTK with a pre-set up flight route? Or are they like almost setting up, electric collars work where you have like the lines you put on in your yard and it, like, if it goes past that line, it goes off. Like, what are they doing?
I saw like three antennas on that small drone, so I'm not entirely sure. There's no way they're doing like RTK or GPS because you just don't have enough. So they may have some really, really basic LiDAR sensor, right? Something that's going to function in low light. The thing is nothing's moving in there. So the environment is extremely repetitive. Everything is fixed. So you have one thing going for you, even though it's low light, is it's a very fixed environment where things don't move. When you go into a warehouse, those shelves do not move. The only thing that moves is the stuff on the shelves. So all those alleyways are always clear. So I think it's some sort of internal reference system. You know what I mean? Like it knows where it is. It's like its own coordinate system that it's operating on.
Yeah.
And it works when you're operating in a small area, when you're not going far away from your home point, you can use your own little coordinate system. But when you start to get far away, now you need a map and stuff. It's like as a human being, right? You can be in your own town without GPS and you know where you are based on visual reference. But again, there's no visual because it's night. So
it's like a blind person in their house. They know where everything's at, you know?
There still is some pretty cool technology that exists in these IMUs and these boards that you can set yourself at 00. And as long as you're not going at a really fast speed, you can kind of constantly know where you are. The faster you go and the further you go from where you started, again, it becomes very hard to remember where you are. Or know where the hell you are. Well, fantastic episode. Jumped into a lot of neat stuff. Talked about the FPV logic, some of the FPV simulators. I just saw that one pop up. It was on like LinkedIn or something. So if something else exists, Terry, we need to know what it is. I'm ready to, I've got the drone. I need a little bit more
practice,
confidence, right? I've never used a sim though. I've never used a sim because I've never really necessarily found one that I was like, oh, this is the one to use. So we'll get more information. Terry's going to dive into that.
Does 910 Drones sell FPV parts itself, kits, or do they, I know that you do the Avata, right?
So the Avada really is like a ready to fly, right? So it's already put together. It's ready to fly. Everything works. You know, it's digital. So the quality of the video is very good. It's plug and play, right? You're $1,400, right? That's your cost. There are other ready to fly drone kits that aren't DJI that look like an FPV drone that you can buy for $600, $700, $800. So this is no different than like a dirt bike, you know, a paintball gun. How much do people spend on paintball guns? And they go and play paintball, and then they spend money on ammo, the paintballs, hundreds of dollars. You go and you get a dirt bike, you're spending money. Anything people do as an adult for hobby, even fishing, right? All these things cost something. So video games, $60, right? You got a stack of it, $300, $400, $500.
Yeah, the new ones.
Speak for yourself on that one. I play one video game,
one game. Terry's just a one game bowl,
one game a year.
FPV outside, yeah. Talked about some counter UAS stuff, looked at it, technology, the sail drone going into the hurricane again, installing sensors onto power lines, really cool. Drone light shows, the Wii Robot Tesla drone light show. Denver, if you're trying to go on a little trip and you want to see, there's going to be November 22nd to the 31st of December, a drone light show for 15 minutes every night in Denver, Colorado. Drones made a huge impact in response to the disasters in Western North Carolina, as well as some of the other states. So shout out to any of the folks that were involved with those efforts. Everybody, you know, really appreciates those contributions. It was amazing to see the folks on the east side of North Carolina just jump to help supplies and send stuff. Because traditionally, I think most of us know that when hurricanes come through, it's that East Coast central area that's getting, you know, a lot of this more devastating impact. And it's the folks, you know, on the west side that are supporting. So it was really encouraging to see the reciprocation. No matter who's impacted in this state, people are here to help. That plant discovery and collection was really neat. That little saw capture there. If you were listening on audio only and you want to see something cool, I don't know. I think that video is on YouTube. So if you YouTube like drone collects, drone plant collection, you should be able to see that. And then we'll have the link in the description in the podcast as well. What am I thinking? Ended the podcast here. We went lights out with the lights out inventory drone, which is supposed to be capable of conducting your indoor inventory management at night with the lights out. So no longer would the drone need to fly, you know, during the day when you have your operations taking place and you don't have to leave the lights on in order for the drone to do its job. Now you can turn the lights out, maybe leave on a little nightlight, little Mickey Mouse or Mario nightlight, maybe, depending on, you know, what your drone likes. And then, you know, it'll do its thing. So really, really neat to see that advancement in technology there. We appreciate everybody for tuning in and listening. Hopefully you found some insightful information, learned something, found something interesting. Hell, maybe even got a laugh during this episode. But appreciate everybody's time. DroneLife.com. Always check it out. Subscribe and stay up on the latest drone news and events. Thank you very much, Samuel and Terry, for your time and attention. We will see all of our listeners next week. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.